I'm really excited to welcome a new sponsor to the show. We're careful about the sponsors that we involve. I really am not into really pushing products unless it's something that I use myself and like and want to share with all of you. And so I've been trying out Finn, and I really like it, and so I'm excited to talk to you about it. Finn is a high-quality virtual assistant. You can use it to handle all kind of tasks like scheduling meetings, booking travel, buying gifts, or even more complicated things like hiring freelancers, building websites. I'm just starting to use it and finding, you know, a lot of fun ways to save time, take things off my plate. I'll let you know as we go in the weeks to come, you know, the different things that I come up with. So far, you know, I used it to cancel a subscription, some software I wasn't using. I'm embarrassed to say I'd been paying like $60 a month for the last 2 years without using this thing, and just never got around to it. So I hit Finn, cancel that for me. It's done. I'm using it to do LinkedIn research to help me find some candidates of people I need to hire. It's fast, easy, affordable. Basically everything a great assistant can do. And what I really like about it is that there's so many ways to access Finn. You can use their website, send them an email, a text. There's a mobile app. You can even just send them a voice message and they jump on it. You can try it now for free. I've got my very own link just for Rebel Radio listeners, and I'm excited to share it with you at no cost. Get over to finn.com/rebel. Check it out. Let me know what you think. finn.com/REBEL. finn.com/rebel. I want to hear how you're using it. Hit me up on social. Let me know if you tried out Finn, what you think. And, you know, I'd love to share ideas about how we can all be more productive.
You're listening to Rebel Radio. This is DJ Bella Fiasco. Fuck off, Josh. Not fuck you, Josh. Fuck off, Josh.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
Would you say Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I talk to the Rebels who are shaping youth culture. We find out how they do it, why they do it, and what you can do to get a little piece of the pie for yourself. We're also the only show that brings you new music every week from EDM.com. I'm your host, Josh Levine, and my guest today is Bella Fiasco. She's a great young DJ. She's a brand ambassador for the Beat Junkies. Check her out on Mixcloud. She's got a new mix called the Drip Mix, which if you want to get up on new hip-hop music, that's a good way to do it. She's going to talk to us about what it's like being a woman in DJ culture today, how that whole landscape is changing, how she's taking inspiration from other female DJs, and some lessons she's learned about when to let people get close to you, how to handle it when they betray you, all that stuff. Good stuff coming up with Bella Fiasco on Rebel Radio, right after our EDM.com track of the week.
Yeah. You know they say insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting new results. It's time to evolve. Ducking the law when I ride with my dog. No time to catch a case, man, it's time to evolve. My family's straight, gotta ride for the cause. We entrepreneurs, man, it's time to evolve. Been at the bottom, no more riding alone. I'm taking my chance, it's time to evolve. I seen them rise, I seen them fall. But that ain't my fate, man, it's time to evolve. This the rise of Atlantis, his apparatus, the canvas on which I paint is a matter of Jacob's ladder. The madness risen from pain, from battered industry chatter, the range. Been this way since I came and my dreams shattered, dawg. Right in front of my cousin after the pact was made. We never going back to push packs, it's like a masquerade. So many different angles to validate what they had to say. My family looking at me like raps on pain to that rapping pace. Disappointed, disjointed from every angle. Dance around the subject of failure, but never tangle. I pray to God and his guardian angels. You got a part of my angles, the strength of my brain is.
Yo, that was the EDM.com track of the week. Jay Nolan with Evolve. Hope you enjoyed that one. Get over to EDM.com for more new music. And right now, let's get into the interview with Bella Fiasco.
You gotta learn where I'm headed. It's such a fast curve.
Rap nerves can't decipher what my life is like.
I'm interviewing you, so.
All right. Well, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
I just learned about you recently and have been listening to a lot of mixes, so I'm excited to hear what it's all about.
I hope some good mixes.
Yeah, good stuff, actually. I'm curious about, I have some questions about some of them, but.
Okay, ask away.
No, I want to know how you got started. You were telling us about moving from Philippines and your journey, but.
Yeah.
I want to know how you first got into music.
I've always been around music. My parents are both musicians. My dad specifically is a bass player, and he's been in bands like his entire life.
Nice.
Probably, well, my entire life.
Your entire life, yeah.
Yeah, and when I was little, he would take me along to his gigs.
Yeah.
I mean, in the Philippines, you didn't have to be.
What kind of bands?
My dad's band does everything from funk, acid jazz, R&B, cool. All of that stuff.
Nice.
And then, but they had a weird transition, like during their last like years of fame in the Philippines. They were very well established,
really?
And popular band in the Philippines.
Yeah.
But maybe I would say The Passage.
Okay.
I would say like right around their last like year of popularity, they transitioned into house electronic music.
Wow.
And that was something really like new in the Philippines.
Sure.
But these were all like studio recorded albums. Like they were still an 8-piece band, but they were recording, you know, electronic music and like just making it sound new.
Yeah.
But like I don't think Philippines was ready for that. Like that whole scene was just like, it wasn't even that it was foreign and cool. It was like,
I don't know
this
if
makes
ready
no
for
sense.
An 8-piece house band. That's cool.
Yeah, but if and I wish you guys could like peep it out. Like they have some YouTube, like old YouTube videos, and like their album's still up, like on iTunes and Spotify, whatever. You can find it anywhere. But
yeah.
It sounds cool now. It's different because it's cool because it sounds different now.
Right.
But like around then, I feel like that was like the death of their fame. But anyways, my dad would take me along to all their gigs because I mean, who would be babysitting me? No one, because my mom would be coming along too. And I mean, it's Philippines, you could go to the club,
right?
Could be like, I'm like 5 years old at the club sleeping, you know what I mean? And that was, I've just always been around it. I was around music before I even realized that I was in music, you know what I mean? So it was just like
first, so other than your dad's music, is there a first record that you are aware of, like remember discovering or getting excited about?
That's so hard. Like, that's so hard to answer. I'm always around music.
Yeah.
Like, I'd literally be in the house, my mom would be blasting music, and I'm like traumatized from like loud music because, you know, I'm young and my ears are so sensitive. My parents are probably deaf. My mom loved Stevie Wonder, Earth, Wind, and Fire. But she loved like Euro bands too. Like she loved D Sound, a lot of Sade, everything and anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. And so were you playing music too?
Yeah. My dad, well, my first, self-taught instrument was the guitar.
Mm.
I wasn't good at it. So my dad taught me how to play the drums.
Okay.
The drums was probably the longest instrument that I actually stuck to and was like really interested in excelling at.
Yeah.
I'd say I'm decent, but it wasn't long after till I realized that DJing existed.
Mm-hmm.
But I always say this, I feel like DJing found me because, well, my dad bought me my first spare turntable, so start there.
Okay.
But he bought a pair of turntables because my dad owns a PA rental company.
Uh-huh.
So he does like weddings and private parties and all that. And it was kind of one of those things where it was like, you should learn how to DJ. And I'm like, why not?
Yeah.
But it was like everything just tied in together. Like in middle school, I just always had a knack for like curating playlists, like soundtracking. I would burn playlists onto CDs and I'd pass them out to friends. And it got to a point where they'd ask me for like playlists and they would pay me for it. And it was just like a little, you know, like middle school hustle. Like burn CDs and get money for it.
Yeah.
That and my dad doing private events, he would always ask me for like, hey, I'm doing a wedding. Do you think you could put a playlist together? Or, you know, little things like it would, and I'd ask like, who's getting married? Like, where are they from? How old are they? Just like things like that, like programming and knowing that this is what fits for that.
Yeah.
And then that's when he bought my turntables, and then I just transitioned into learning. But it wasn't one of those things where it was like, I saw a DJ and was like, that's really cool. Mm-hmm. I want to do that. You know what I mean? I feel like I kind of got thrown into it, and I realized that I loved it. So it was kind of like, that's what I mean, but I feel like it found me.
That's cool.
Or maybe my dad did and kind of just threw me in there, but.
Yeah. Do you remember the first party you played in front of people?
Yeah. It was a wedding gig.
Oh, yeah.
I did wedding gigs for like, shit, like 1 to 2 years.
Uh-huh.
But even after I made it into clubs, I was still doing weddings.
Yeah.
That's where I got all my practice.
It's a good place to start because you get paid.
Yeah, you get paid. And that's when I realized I wanted to be an open format DJ.
Yeah.
Because even like...
Yeah, you have to play everything.
Yeah, but even like getting into the culture and learning about the culture, just I didn't want to go into it not knowing any history. I wanted to learn it the right way and have the right knowledge. And I'd reach out to my uncles who are DJs, and you know, they're all in hip hop, obviously. And I love hip hop. Hip hop's my first love too, but like I loved everything else. And like DJing corporate parties and weddings and all that, I learned how to play outside of the box.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, I couldn't just play hip hop because I loved hip hop. Like I had to, you know, learn how to play everything else. And
yeah. But you know, we know so many great Filipino DJs here.
Right. It is a Filipino dominated field.
Yeah,
I feel.
Absolutely. So then at what point do you realize that that's going to be a career?
When I started to fail my classes at school.
Yeah.
Because I was just so focused at like DJing. Like it was, so doing the wedding stuff with my dad and making money off of that, it took a while for it to feel like I was doing it for fun because at first it was like, I want to help my dad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it wasn't until I actually started developing as a DJ and like learning the craft when I realized like, this is amazing. Like I'm good at this. Like I got to develop as a DJ and really take this seriously. And when I started doing club gigs and getting paid for that, I started doing pretty bad at school.
Uh-huh.
But for a couple of years, I really wanted to balance both. I was like school and DJ, DJ.
What age?
Right out of high school.
Okay.
So 2 years out of high school, I was balancing both. And I couldn't focus on DJing so much and I couldn't focus on school so much. So it was just like my attention was always just divided and I needed to stick with one thing. And my parents have always been so supportive. Like people to this day, like they ask me like how did being Filipino, how did you drop out of college and how were you able to just do what you do and your parents not like be on your ass about it? And I'm like, they're musicians, they get it. Like my dad's been in the nightlife scene for like ever, so he gets it. And I never got shit from them. They're just like, as long as you do good and you take this seriously and you don't fuck around, you're good. So I've always had their support.
So was there like a day then when you sat down and you're like, okay, I'm not going to do school. I'm going to be a DJ.
Oh, yeah. this was the day that I told my mom, I can't pass statistics.
Uh-huh.
I can't pass statistics. I hate math. And I made a proposal to my mom. But she had already brought this up. Like she realized that I wasn't doing well in school. And she was like, look, if this is something you really want to do, you could take a break. You can always go back to school. School's always going to be there. Like, go full throttle at this and just do your thing. And it was, like, a hard day at school.
Yeah.
And I talked to my mom, and I was just like, I think I'm going to take you up on that offer. But I always, like, try to stray away from it because, like, you know, everybody in the family's a doctor, lawyers, and nurses, shit like that. But I was just like, if I have you guys' support, I think I'm good. You guys are my parents. My mom's like, don't worry about that. Like, don't worry about what they have to say. Like, you're my daughter. We're your parents. We're okay with it. Don't worry about that shit. Like, if you really want to do this, you could do it. Because my dad would talk about it, like, all the sacrifices that he made just to be a musician. You know what I mean? Because it was the same thing. Like, his parents weren't supportive of it at first.
Right.
Till he realized that all he had to do was really put everything into it. and succeed, then they would see that it, you know, that it's working out.
Mm-hmm. What was the day after like? Do you start to develop a plan for like what you're gonna do, or?
Well, around
like,
that
what
time.
What changes after you made that decision?
Around that time, I already had my foot in some clubs, but I think that it wasn't long after I like left school when I actually like made my way from doing Long Beach, because I'm from Long Beach. Mm-hmm. It wasn't long after that till I made it to LA from Long Beach, and from then everything just like was like crystal clear. I'm like, I could do this. Mm-hmm. Like just learning the ropes and being in that scene outside of, you know, like local.
Right.
I was like, I could do this and yeah. I want to take this further. And that's what I did. I just worked my ass off. And that's, it's hard. I've never had to talk about this. It's crazy. I think I was right in between the time of female DJs either being really good, mm-hmm. or you know, the show DJs.
So who comes to mind when you think of that?
When I think of,
like, who was happening, like what female DJs were happening in that time?
Okay, like I said, it was either like the really, really good, well respected DJs.
Which is who?
Shorty, okay. Tina T, Charisma's on the radio and I listened to her forever. Mm-hmm. Or you know, the show DJs. Mm-hmm. It was hard to be in between, because if you showed up to the club and you looked cute, it was like, she's right. probably shitty because she looks cute, because there weren't that many.
Right.
And if you did look cute or you were half naked DJing, you automatically fell in that category.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you were that really, really great DJ, you just, I don't know, like there was a certain image that people looked for,
sure,
I feel like, and that's like a harsh truth.
So how has that environment changed? Obviously, like, we're seeing.
Oh yeah!
It's a really good time to be a woman.
It's a great time to be
in a lot of businesses right now.
Yeah.
How is that impacting DJing?
I feel like I'm like literally witnessing it. I'm living right in the middle of it, because, yeah. like I said, like when I first started DJing, there wasn't like that in between. It was either this or that, and
right.
There were times where I felt like I had to compromise my image just so that I could show up and have people take me seriously, you know what I mean? But I felt like I didn't have to do that.
Right.
But I did it anyways, because it everything was like a compromise, you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like I didn't want, and especially like the gigs that I was doing, opening for like male DJs that I really looked up to, all I still care about is street cred.
Right.
Like credibility is all that matters, you know what I mean? And DJing with like guys that I've looked up to, and like I would literally, you know, I'd open for these guys and I'm like shaking, like, oh my God, am I doing the right thing? Am I playing the right opening set? Like, what do you think they think? And then like, I turn around after my set, like getting them ready. And then there's some DJs that wouldn't even like shake my hand.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Really?
And to me, it's like, even outside of the whole DJing thing, I'm still a female, and I
sure.
feel like really, you know, it's a demeaning feeling. And
yeah.
I've felt that so many times, just being a female DJ.
Yeah.
So like I said, like I'm like right in the middle of that transition. And it's a great time to be a female DJ, because now you could be whoever you want. But I,
mm-hmm.
it's not even just in like the DJ industry, like
mm-hmm.
this whole climate is like changing everything else. Like I feel like now we're like glorifying the whole, you can be whoever you want, be
right.
comfortable, you don't have to try and be someone else.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a great climate, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Check it out, y'all. Help me welcome LinkedIn to the show as our newest sponsor. I couldn't be more excited about this one. I don't know if you know what I do for a living. I'm not only the humble host of your favorite podcast, I also run a lifestyle marketing agency. We create events and experiential activations and content to help brands make investments in music, art, and other areas of culture. And this year, we also started offering recruiting services to help companies hire amazing people from within the network we've built over the years. In other words, I have to hire a lot of people. And it's no exaggeration to say I couldn't do that without LinkedIn. That's the truth. I use it every day to network, to keep in touch with people, to search for candidates, to do research. It's pretty much always open on my computer. LinkedIn is a better way to find great talent than the job boards or the other job sites. I mean, think about it. Millions of people are already using LinkedIn for networking. Most of those people aren't checking job boards, but they're on LinkedIn. So if you post your job there, people are way more likely to see it and to pay attention. 22 million people view and apply to jobs on LinkedIn every week, and their system considers the skills, experiences, location, and more to match and promote your job to potential candidates. If you're not using LinkedIn for your hiring needs, you're missing out. So if you need to hire people for your company, I'm gonna hook you up. Go to linkedin.com/rebel and get a $50 credit toward your first job post. That's linkedin.com/rebel for a $50 credit today. Terms and conditions apply.
So how's that affecting your work? I mean, you know, nightlife is such a male-dominated industry, from the promoters to the, you know, to most DJs, to, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, we're hearing stories in every other industry about how that people abuse their power.
Right.
So what's the climate like now? Like, how, what's changed? How would you say it's changed in the last year or so?
I guess they're more open to female talent without the restriction, but not completely.
Of course.
You know, I don't know if it's ever going to be, we're ever going to reach that spot.
Probably
but,
not.
Well, for the most part, most promoters or clubs or events that I work with, I've worked with for years. So it's all about like the relationships that I've built with them and like the trust and loyalty and that they have. Sorry. That they have for me. And it's just, it's building. Like, I would say 80% of the gigs that I have now are all from events and parties that I've done over the years.
Yeah.
So it's all just building a relationship. If they know you're good, they're going to keep working with you.
So can you think of somebody who kind of put you on at the beginning, and what was that like? Meaning, you know, what did you do to get them to take a chance on you, or what did they see in you?
I played a gig for $50 in Long Beach. And it was just because I was practically begging him for a slot at this club.
Right.
Just to show him that I could do it. But I, you know what? For the most part, I think it was just to show, it was to show myself that I could do it. I wanted to know if I could do it.
Sure.
It was kind of like a, is this what you really want? You should try it. Like weddings and corporate gigs are, and all that, it's a different ball field. But like being in the club, and this was a busy club in Long Beach. So I was begging him, like, you got to give me a shot. Like, I would show up to this club and just watch other DJs and take that in and learn from it until I told him, hey, I think I'm ready. You should give me a shot.
Yeah.
But then, like, around this time, it was one of those, like, it's so easy to get, like, 50 people in the club. All we got to do is grab a new DJ with a following who are, like, so excited to hear a new DJ. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they use and abuse it too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I did parties like that for a few months, but I didn't mind. I knew I had to start somewhere.
Yeah.
I think the labor was in transitioning from that DJ to a paid DJ, a sought out DJ. You know?
Sure. Yeah.
And I had to leave Long Beach to do that.
Mm.
I had to leave Long Beach, and I worked on branding myself. And I did all of that on my own.
What does that mean? What'd you do?
Branding is hard because, like I mentioned earlier, it's I'm like stuck in between. Like, can I just like dress and look how I want to dress and look, and you guys would still take me seriously?
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, like within the past few years, that there was a weird transition. Like you could be a girl, be as girly as you want, be as woman as you want. But like, how are we going to take you seriously if we feel like that's like distracting us from your skill, you know? And I guess part of my branding was being comfortable and being me and convincing people that I'm still good,
mm-hmm.
or in general, that you could look good and be good.
Mm-hmm.
because it wasn't like around the time that I was starting as a DJ. I don't even know if I'm speaking for everybody else or this was just like a personal experience, but I didn't feel comfortable.
Sure.
I was always scared. I was always worried. I was always nervous.
So you know? Was there a point where that changed?
To be honest, being comfortable probably didn't happen till the last couple of years. Mm. Just having a name for myself and, you know, being, I don't want to sound a certain way, but just like having that demand is when I started to feel comfortable. And it was all of those years that I felt like I had to compromise. You know what I mean? It all built up to now having a brand and credibility and respect and just trust from others.
Yeah. What, are there any mistakes you made kind of early on that you would tell somebody starting out not to make?
Mistakes? Probably, that's a good question. Because, you know, people always ask about...
ask you bad questions?
Because people ask the opposite, usually.
That's my job. Ask
but you're
questions.
Asking the
I
opposite.
I only have one job here.
Right. A mistake that I...
I mean, maybe you didn't make any mistakes.
No, I've had some weaknesses. Maybe it was... over-compromising. Maybe it was not having enough courage sometimes. Mm. Maybe it was missing out on opportunities because I didn't feel like I fit these experiences.
Yeah.
Maybe it was that. Like I know I talk about compromising a lot because I did so much of it. Maybe some experiences I did a little too much of it and I held myself back.
Can you think of an example?
Not in specific, but I do want to talk about a story maybe that kind of had to do with it.
Let's hear a story.
Let me drink some water.
Oh, this is dramatic.
Sip some tea. So I remember I used to open for this guy. Obviously, I'm not going to say any names. I used to open for this guy for a couple of years. And I looked up to him. I even, I did like drops on his mixtape. Like, we were cool. Like, he was super cool, and I always felt comfortable with him. I would always ask him for advice, starting out DJing, and it's getting cold. Starting out DJing and getting into clubs and all that, and he would book me at, like, his residencies and all that. Like, I had his trust.
Right.
We were super cool, right?
Yeah.
And then fast forward to a couple of years when I left DJing, like, local stuff, and I made it to L.A., Vegas, Hollywood, whatever. We lost touch, and I don't know, like, social media is weird. Like, people get super sensitive over shit. Like, she doesn't follow me back, or she doesn't respond to my messages and shit like that.
Yeah.
You know how sensitive people are. I feel like the most sensitive people are DJs, but whatever.
Is that right?
I feel like it.
Okay.
So, I ran into him at a party. Fuck, I hope he doesn't listen to this. I ran into him at a party.
We're not gonna say his name.
No.
It's all good.
If I say the party, he'll know I'm talking about him. Ran into him at a party, and this was literally a week after I did an event with the Beat Junkies. So it was all the Beat Junkies guys, and I opened for all of them. And he was drunk. I was happy to see him. I was like, oh my God, it's been so long, like. What's going on? What's good? Like, all that yada yada. And then he was drunk and he was just like automatically like salty. Like, he was just like, oh, how you doing? Like, yeah, so you're all Hollywood now? The term Hollywood. So you're all Hollywood now? You know, you forgot about all of us and all that shit. And he was drunk, so I didn't really like have anything to say. So I was just like, you want a drink? That was always my go-to. You want a drink? I'll get you a shot. Let's go drinks, take a shot, whatever. So we go to the bar, and he jumps right into it. He's like, so it's crazy that you do, like, all of these events with, you know, the Beat Junkies, and, like, you're an ambassador now, and blah, blah, blah. He was like, what's up with that? Like, do you think you deserve it? That was his first question. Do you think you deserve it?
Yeah.
And this wasn't... I mean, everything that I've done with the Beat Junkies is a huge deal to me. Even just the recognition. That's all I ever needed. The recognition, the acknowledgement, just being around them, rubbing shoulders with them, let alone, like, playing with them. that's a huge deal for me. But I guess for someone to notice it in that light and that be the first question, like, do you deserve it?
Yeah.
I was so offended. I didn't even know what to say to him. But in my head, I had so much that I wanted to say. Like,
sure.
You know what I've struggled with. You know the process. You know what I went through, the journey. Like, you've seen it. You were there. Like, what do you mean, do I deserve it? Like, what's the deal? Like, I didn't understand where it was coming from. And the next day, he was on Twitter, knowing that I follow him, and he was still talking shit. He was like, it's just crazy. Like, you guys give these female DJs a spotlight, and it's like, you like, where did, like, turntablism go and all that? And he's very old school. I guess it's something I want to talk about too. You know, there's always, like, those bitter old school veteran DJs, and he's just like, where did turntablism go, and blah blah blah. Like, I want to see her, like, battle, and then called some other girl out, like, go battle this girl out.
Yeah.
And it's just like, and even my style from that other female DJ were so different.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I respect turntablism. Like, I've learned the craft. I'm still learning the craft, but it's like, I've become more than that. Like, yeah. I don't just want to do that. I expanded my craft. So
what, like, what did you learn from that experience, other than that guy's obviously an asshole?
But. Yeah, he's an effing douchebag. Learning that, just brush it off.
Yeah.
And I guess that's why I said earlier, like, to this day, I feel like I'm still trying to earn, you know, like, credibility from others, because, like I said, maybe for some people I'm just never gonna reach that point.
Yeah, sure.
Because they're never gonna accept it.
Right. But that's more, like, about them than you, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. But yeah. And you know, some people are just not open to that. Or even take out the whole female DJ thing, like, even new technology or new ways to DJ whatever, new styles, some people are just not open to it. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, I've noticed, you know, some people love to, like, find the flaws in other people. And, you know, you talk about DJs and, you know, I mean, we used to do it when we were younger. So we go see some big DJ and be like, find all the shit that was wrong in his set or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's part of it. And
yeah,
you have
exactly.
to not pay attention to that stuff.
Right. But I'm so hard on myself. I still do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I still get nervous.
Yeah.
All my gigs, even if it's like the smallest bar gig, I still get nervous. Because I always feel like someone's watching and judging. I mean, I'll have, and I know this because I'm nosy, I'll have DJs literally come to, like, certain stuff, and I know who they are, but, like, they don't think I know them, and they'll just, like, stand around and, like,
that's
peep
funny.
Game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I know that. I did this Guitar Center tour. It was like a clinic for, like, Bose.
Mm-hmm.
I did clinics all over SoCal. So this was pretty much, I would just do, like, demos, like, live demos or, like, mini, like, exhibition sets.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always know, it's so funny, I would always know who the DJs are because they would always stand behind me to see if I was really doing anything.
Right.
And everyone else would be, like, in the front. I'd be like, I know which ones are behind me. These are the DJs behind me that want to know if I'm doing the right thing, if I'm doing something, anything.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Hey, let's go back into Rebel Radio archives. Check out Mr. Chalk, one of the world-famous beat junkies. He tells us what it's like kind of building that team and how they've become such an amazing, strong brand all over the world. You can get that on iTunes, on SoundCloud, Rebel Radio, after, of course, you finish up with Bella Fiasco.
So you talked about Beat Junkies a little bit, and I love those guys. What have you learned from them?
What I really take from them, obviously, aside from all the technicality and just the culture and the art and all of that,
mm-hmm.
is just how humble each and every single one of them are.
Mm-hmm.
They respect everyone. Like, I used to get so scared if I, like, had to be in the same room as any of them.
Right.
But now it's like they're literally like the chillest, most respectful, humblest, coolest people. And they don't judge anybody, and it, like I said, like I used to get so nervous being in the room with them, but like now that I know what kind of DJs they are, and like just knowing, getting to know them as human beings, they're amazing people.
Mm-hmm.
They're super cool.
Mm-hmm.
I still get nervous when I play with them, though.
Sure.
They still make me nervous.
I played one of the few parties I've ever DJed. I opened for I think it was Curse and.
Oh, dope.
I forget who it was. It was in a bowling alley. But, and I was not a good DJ. I'm still not a good DJ.
yeah, right.
I've stayed consistent in that. But they were like, to your point, like, they didn't judge me. They were totally cool about it. We were talking about records that I was playing afterwards. Like, you know, it gave me a huge boost to my confidence.
Yeah, totally.
Just being around them. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I really admire that they keep up with the current, you know what I mean? Like they continuously develop. They're not just stuck in that one box.
Sure.
Because I know that a lot of people, when they think beat junkies, old school, turntablism, all that, no, like some of these guys headline clubs in Vegas and now they opened up a school teaching kids how to, you know, learn how to DJ, and it's they're always keeping up to date, so I feel like they're a huge contributor in the development of just DJing as an art.
Absolutely. So what does it mean to be an ambassador?
Well, it's for thebeatjunkies.com. Uh-huh. It's for the record pool.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty much just promo, control, content, all of that. And other than that, it's just a relationship with them, being able to do events with them and stir up ideas with them and all of that.
Nice.
It's good stuff. It's fun stuff. They're always up to so many new things. And
sure.
After the school, now they're doing Beat Junkies TV. So a bunch of new stuff on the way, which is what I admire about them the most.
Yeah.
It's like nonstop work for them.
And what about you? Is there like a mission that you kind of have a vision of where you're going, or is it one foot in front of the other?
Well, first off, producing, I've been in and out of producing for a few years now.
Nice.
Because it's kind of like school. I always felt like I could balance DJing and being a producer at the same time.
Yeah.
But it never works out. I'll get into it for like a couple of months and I get so busy DJing I forget about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always in and out of it. But now I finally have things going. So I have some remixes coming out. I'm doing like a collection series.
Nice.
And that should be coming out sometime this year.
Oh, cool.
And other than that, I'm still doing parties.
So what have you seen about, because a lot of DJ, you know, that's a common career path, right?
Right.
To DJ and then start producing. But they're not the same at all.
No, not at all.
What's been harder about that than you thought it would be?
About
like making that transition or adding producing to?
It's funny you ask that, because I think that's a question that I'm still trying to answer, and I won't know until I try it.
Yeah.
Because even just identifying myself as an open format DJ, how do you garner a specific following for the kind of music that you want to put out if you're an open format DJ? You know what I mean? Like, you kind of have to stick to one thing.
Sure.
And
you can't really be an open format producer.
Yeah, no, it makes no sense.
Right.
And even, and anyways, a little sidetrack, but even being an open format DJ, like, it's both a good and a bad thing. To some people it sounds good, to some it sounds bad, right?
Mm.
Like, it has a stigma, but to some it's like, whoa, you're an open format DJ, how amazing. But I've had a producer friend tell me, like, you can't put out any music and make a name for yourself as a producer if you're an open format DJ. He's like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like,
Vice does it.
That's the thing.
Vice does fine with that.
That's the thing. Right. And my argument was always A-Track, Vice. Yeah. Like, they're able to do it. You can do it. And I feel like now, with the climate in DJing now, that's what I kind of want to help contributing to, which is making open format happen again. But it won't be corny. Because, you know, sometimes open format, they're like, that's corny. Like,
yeah.
Open format, you're a wedding DJ. Like,
yeah, I mean, that was my take on it, is that there was an era when a lot of DJs started relying on sort of gimmicks.
Right.
In that open format. And it became just playing like super cheesy, fun stuff that would kind of make people laugh, or like playing like ironically.
Right.
which we both know a lot of DJs who play open format not that way.
Yeah.
But I think, to your point, like, I guess then that shaped people's perception overall.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I want to, that's what I'm working on right now. When I say open format,
kind of music
I want to.
What kind of music are you going to
produce? I've always loved classics. I know it's so typical, but I've always loved classics. I want to recreate funk and disco joints, make it electronic, but it's not going to be like hard bass type of big room EDM stuff.
Sure.
It's something you could listen to in the car, but you could play it in your sets too.
Right.
You just probably won't be able to play it during your prime time slot.
Yeah.
But it's something to listen to. I don't want to, I always say this, if I get into production, I don't want to produce music that you can only play in the club. Mm. I really want it to be like music that you could listen to. Because most of the stuff that producers and DJs put out, it's stuff that you would only use at a club or at a bar, at a lounge, whatever.
Sure.
But would you actually like download this, put it in your iTunes, and play it in the car? While you're getting ready?
Right.
Or while you're just like cooking in the house, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want it to be like music.
Okay. I saw you tweeting about Swedish House Mafia. and I was having this conversation with a friend of mine yesterday who, he was there in Miami, and his, and what he said is he felt like Swedish House Mafia breaking up kind of signaled the end of that like EDM era.
I think so too.
And that this performance signaled a new era. And we were kind of arguing, because I don't think the name EDM, I don't think can come back.
Right.
But I think that it'll just be called something else, and like that music will continue to live on. But he was kind of saying, as I wasn't there and I didn't watch it on video, but like that he felt like that performance kind of started a new era.
Yeah. Well, I feel like EDM in its own just, it keeps birthing like all sorts of other genres.
Sure.
There's so many subgenres under EDM, and it's all like right now, what's like hot right now? Everybody's doing the whole future bass mood stuff.
Yeah.
That's hot right now.
Right.
But do you think that's gonna last?
No, I mean, I think dance music is by definition, it's a innovative process.
Right.
Right, so it's always changed.
Exactly.
Super fast.
Yeah.
And if you look at the 30 years that there's been quote unquote dance music, right, like we've had 100 genres.
Right.
And, you know, that's not true in any other style of music.
Exactly.
And I think that's just going to continue.
Yeah.
Someone told me the other day drum and bass is about to come back in a big way.
Probably.
Which I don't know if that's true or not, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, that's popped up. It's popped up over the years, you know.
But would it still be called EDM? Because we still associate EDM with that, like what you said, Swedish House Mafia.
Yeah, I think it's kind of what we're saying about open format, that like there becomes a stigma because certain people exactly. have success doing it in a way that's turns the rest of us off,
mm-hmm.
right? And so then there becomes a stigma, and I think it'll end up with a new brand.
Yeah.
Which is fine, because it doesn't really matter what we call
right.
stuff, right? That just becomes a convenience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, that's the point.
You also tweeted about...
my Twitter's a mess.
Is
I'm
it?
So mad you're on my Twitter.
Oh no, I didn't see anything bad, but you said
I feel
something.
Like I have a different identity on Twitter because I wouldn't post
oh, really?
Anything on Twitter on Instagram. You know what I mean?
So is that,
I'm more free on Twitter.
So is Instagram you're like that's your brand?
I don't know. I feel like it's my portfolio.
Okay.
Like I got rid of my Facebook page. I don't think anybody checks up on me on Facebook.
Instagram's interesting, like, you know, I get it, I use it. Whatever, but I feel like most people are just not that interesting on Instagram. Like, because, and I say that because, like, it's just pictures.
Yeah.
Right? And
right.
so the people that are really good at Instagram, first of all, if you're just insanely good looking and you just post pictures of yourself.
Right.
Which there's a lot of those people, and those are usually the most popular people on Instagram.
Right.
right?
The ones that make a living off of Instagram.
Exactly. And you just have to be born a certain way and willing to act a certain way on camera, right?
Yeah.
And then for everyone else, it's like, oh, here's something I saw. But there's no context, right? I mean,
right.
You know, there's a couple of hashtags or whatever,
yeah.
but there's no, but on Twitter or like other, you get a better sense of someone's personality.
Right, exactly.
Based on what they wrote.
I would say so. I would say Twitter's probably where I'm most free.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, but you said that this is not like, anything controversial, but you just said something about turning down a tour because it didn't fit with your brand.
Oh, right.
And so I'm just curious, like, about that. What's that process to decide how well something fits with your brand? I feel like my guess is that some things are obvious one way or the other,
mm-hmm.
and then there's gray area in between. And so how do you think about that?
I would say just knowing the balance between wanting to do something for the clout or the popularity or maintaining your image.
Is that hard?
Or your rep. It is hard. It's a continuous compromise. Again, always compromise.
It's really hard for me to turn shit down. Because I feel...
This
know,
was hard to turn down, I would say.
Yeah.
Mainly because of bread and travel. But, yeah. like, I just... I couldn't. Like, I feel like I would take, like, a few steps back with, like, certain parts of like my history that I've like earned respect out of.
Yeah.
I take a few steps back. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And even so, like, you know, the whole like earning like a bunch of new followers from this and like popularity or fame, I was like it's probably not even going to be the kind of people that I want looking
sure.
after my shit, you know?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
It's not going to be the same people I want listening to my stuff. They're not
right.
going to want my stuff.
Right.
So it didn't even fit
yeah.
everything I had going on. So I was just like,
okay. I know you post a lot of mixes.
Mm-hmm.
How does that help you? Like, think kind of from a business perspective. How does that help you?
Having content that people could look out for or anticipate or just have.
So do you see that, like, it helps you get gigs because someone...
Listen to my mixes. You know
yeah.
what?
Or do they, or is it, like, a certain number of plays and then they want to book you?
No.
Or, like, is there...
Ironically, I don't think I've ever heard anyone say, we're booking you because we heard your mix.
Yeah.
But then again, I'm not in that era. Like,
right.
I don't... Like, even, like, moving from SoundCloud to MixCloud, I had, like... If I have like I don't know how many followers I have on Instagram, maybe close to 1,000,
mm-hmm.
and I would get like a fair amount of listeners and listens.
Right.
But then I moved to SoundCloud. I couldn't even get more than 200 followers.
I mean, MixCloud is that whole thing to me is really unfortunate. Because
it is.
SoundCloud, is such a great experience
mm-hmm.
as a listener.
Yeah.
Right? And just the way it works and
exactly.
Everything about it is great except for when they pull shit down.
Yeah.
Right? And Mixcloud is not.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. You know, but it doesn't have the same, I don't know, I haven't spent time really thinking about it, but yeah, it's just not the same.
Right. Well, one, the interface kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And especially because people will listen to mixes are always going to be on the go. It's always going to be like mobile.
Mobile. Yeah.
And they don't have, they have an app, but it's not mobile friendly. It's the interface just sucks, period.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's moving my mixes from SoundCloud to MixCloud just sucked.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's so hard to get traffic on MixCloud. It's so hard to make people move from SoundCloud to MixCloud. And I'm trying so hard. I'm like, I'm not going to post anything on SoundCloud. You guys will have to listen to it on MixCloud. But it's still, they'll email me and be like, can I have the MP3? Like, if there's no download link, like, can I just have it? Like, But the mixtape era is, I don't think I'm in that era. I still do it because it's a way for me to express my craft,
yeah,
I guess, and just to have content, and mm-hmm. and I love doing it. So, mm-hmm. but I don't think I'm past the mixtape era, so, yeah.
Sure.
Which kind of sucks, but like I said, I still do it because doing it.
Like we were saying, I think the era is going to keep changing. Things will come back. And
maybe mixtapes are coming back, yeah.
SoundCloud, supposedly, I have a friend who's in the business of clearing all the songs and contained in a mix. It's Dub something. Dubset is the company. And so they're...
I thought you said Dubstep.
No, Dubset.
Uh-huh.
And so they're starting to work with DJs and to get all the songs cleared.
Yeah,
so that those
I don't know why they haven't done that sooner. It sucks. I have mixes that get taken down like 2 years later. I don't know how that works, but it'll get taken down 2 years later. Or it'll get taken down 20 hours later.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I always feel like a piece of my heart breaks. I don't have any YouTube content.
No.
He's on my head about this.
You don't put mixes up on YouTube?
No. I'm not very...
I don't know if that's even a good idea.
I'm not very video interactive.
Like, I don't listen to music on YouTube, but a lot of people do.
Does anybody do that?
Yeah, it's the number one place that people listen to music.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and a lot of it's just no visual, right? It's just a record spinning or just nothing.
Are you serious?
Just a picture. Yeah.
But you can't even listen to YouTube and exit out of the app and have the music still playing.
Yeah, again, like... That's a weird thing. It's a terrible experience.
What?
Millions of people.
And so it must be people listening like on their desktop or something.
I think so.
Yeah, people don't have phones.
Yeah,
people
who
live like in the anyways.
Yeah, work or I don't know. I don't know how that works. What's the hardest part of this job?
Hardest part of this job? I'm gonna give you such an elementary answer. Staying awake.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, we talked about
being really great
at staying awake.
That's actually a good answer.
But if you're working, especially in the summer when you're doing day clubs and nightclubs back to back.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're going to do that like 5 nights, 5 days in a row.
Sure.
It's keeping your energy up.
Yeah.
Because there are gigs where I'm literally standing there and I don't even remember being there at all. I black out from just exhaustion.
Right.
Not from drinking. I like black out and I'm like, I'll go home, take a nap, and wake up and be like, I played today?
Mm-hmm.
There's moments where I'm that tired. Like, I feel like I literally just show up and I play, but, like, I don't remember anything, just, like, black out from exhaustion.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm, like, trying to work on now. And I don't even think this is, like, DJ anything related. It's just working on rest.
Well, I mean, there's a certain, like, schedule for DJs it's hard.
Yeah.
Right. And I think in some ways it only gets harder when there's more travel involved.
Exactly. And, when you're traveling, it gets tricky.
Some people on the show that have said the hardest part is flying is traveling. Right. And not knowing what city you're in or not, you go to all these exotic places, but all you see is the airport, the DJ booth, you don't see the city and any of that.
Yeah, totally.
So you understand why people start to pre-program their sets.
Right. But I wouldn't do that.
Okay.
I got DJs behind me in the DJ booth.
Exactly.
Watching me.
Exactly. Okay, I have a lightning round. So tell me one decision that changed your life forever.
Dropping out of school and becoming a full-time DJ.
Okay, complete this sentence. I don't have talent, I have blank.
Drive.
If I worked for you, like this guy, what's something I would hear you say over and over?
Don't drink tonight.
Okay, that might tell us more about Josh than we wanted to know. Who would you be most excited to learn as a fan of your work?
Is a fan of my work? All the guys that I work with, and especially the Beat Junkies. Mm. I still get like a piece of like an exhilarating feeling whenever I get one of them, you know, praise my work.
Yeah, yeah. Nice.
It's like my dad. Like I feel like I always have to like impress them, and it's always a work in progress, you know?
Yeah. That's funny. I'm listening to Jimmy O Yang's book. Mm-hmm. He has very different. The chapter is about like growing up with Asian parents.
Uh huh.
He has a very different experience than yours.
In what way?
Oh, he did some big comedy show, like stand up.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, and his parents came and they were like, "Yeah, that sucked. You should.
You're not funny."
Yeah.
That was like when Joe Coy.
Right.
His mom told him, "Oh, you want to be a clown?
Right.
That's what they think being funny is."
Yeah, he's kind of said the same thing. So I'm glad you're not having that experience.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I think I'm lucky.
What's your favorite city to travel to?
I love San Francisco.
Yeah.
I love the Bay Area culture.
You ever
I think
play
it's
there?
Sort of. I play there a lot.
Yeah.
It sort of feels like home away from home.
Yeah.
The culture is very similar to Long Beach, mm. I would say. The party scene.
Yeah.
Just like it's like they get wild.
Yeah.
Like Long Beach gets wild. Like if you play in LA, you'll notice that most clubs don't have people on the dance floor going crazy.
Right.
A lot of them just stand around, stare at each other,
for sure.
Especially like the premier nightclubs in Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's a standing room.
Yeah.
But that's the cool thing.
Right.
Or, you know, to them. It's
cool
like if you dance, like, you're crazy. What are you doing here? Go to another club.
Right.
Because you're supposed to just be here, pop bottles, and look at each other.
Yeah.
You know. But I love playing in the Bay. It's always, like, mad energy when I play in the Bay.
Nice. What's the movie that you've seen the most in your life?
Movie that I've seen the most? That Thing You Do. It's like a comedy, sort of musical, sort of like, it is That Thing You Do with an exclamation.
Yeah.
Doo-wop Barbershop.
Tom Hanks.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I've never heard of this.
Because my mom and I would watch that over and over again.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite movie soundtracks.
Rock and roll
too.
Movie.
That movie just makes me happy. You got to go see it.
Apparently.
It'll make you happy.
All right.
It sets a mood. I feel like it's a movie to watch during the day before you get anything else started.
Okay.
Not that you should watch a movie first
thing in the
morning.
I usually don't do that. I don't do that very often. But
on a Sunday or something when you're off or something.
Once in a while, my son and I watch a Sunday morning movie. Sometimes.
Monsters, Inc. 2. I know that movie word for word.
You do?
Yes, because of my little sister.
Okay.
She wouldn't go to sleep until I put that on.
The second one, not the first one.
First one.
All right. Who's your favorite DJ?
That's tough. Can we not favorite DJs? Favorite DJ?
You can pick more than one.
Well, I've always been a huge fan of A-Track, just how he's able to bridge the gap between, like I said, open format, dance, and being able to play festivals as an open format DJ. So, he's the muse, like, and ultimately I feel like that's who I want to mold myself into, that kind of DJ, like his
brand. He played a festival once that I was involved in, and so I stood on stage and watched him DJ, and he made a beat live on stage.
Right.
You've seen him do that?
Mm-hmm, yes.
It's amazing.
And if you see him, if you see him DJ, there's no down moment.
No.
He's actually, like, working.
Yeah.
Like you're not going to tap him on the shoulder and say hi because he's just constantly like working.
Yeah. Yeah, he's incredible.
Yeah. Other than that, all the guys from the Beat Junkies, those are really like my idols.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you're familiar with Nasty Nez.
Yeah, of course.
That's my uncle.
Oh, really?
It's actually my grandpa.
Oh, no way.
But technically my uncle, but I call him my grandpa. But yeah, starting out as a DJ, he was pretty much the one that told me there's a right way to learn.
Yeah.
These are the first steps that you have to take before you can call yourself a DJ.
So what are the first steps?
And it was learning how to play on vinyl.
Yeah.
All of that. Yeah. And like I said, like learning how to DJ, how to teach myself everything. Like but I at least had the idea of knowing that I needed to learn the history before I get into the culture.
Yeah.
So I'm lucky that I had him doing that for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because there were instances where I, you know, like show up to a workshop or whatever, like an open table session, I would show up and mm-hmm. they'd be like, but can you play on vinyl? And it's intimidating.
Right.
You know what I mean? I was like 22 and I'm like, I just learned like a year ago, but okay.
Yeah.
So it was good to have someone tell me that these are the first few steps.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So.
That's cool. I've known Ness for a long time.
Really?
Yeah.
What a small world.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
You know, it is. It's a small community.
Yeah. Even, believe it or not, even with him, it took a while to get his recognition.
I'm sure.
Very OG, yeah. And even when Serato came out, like, he would ask me for help, too. And we would do little trade-offs. Like, mm-hmm. I'll teach you Serato. Give me some vinyls. Teach me some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it took a while for him to, like, give me some personal recognition, too.
Nice.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
I always felt like I had to impress my uncle, so.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
You need that.
Right.
Well, thanks for doing this. How does everybody find you online?
Online at DJ Bella Fiasco on everything. Twitter.
Okay.
Instagram, uh-huh. SoundCloud, Mixcloud, at DJ Bella Fiasco.
Check the Mixcloud.
Check the Mixcloud. Give me some traffic on Mixcloud.
That's right.
Shit.
Nice. Well, thank you.
Thank you. This was fun.
Yo, that was Bella Fiasco on Rebel Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. Leave us a comment, a review. Hit us on Twitter at Rebel Radio Net, on Facebook at Rebel Radio Net. Hit our iTunes page, our YouTube, everywhere you like, you can find us. And most importantly, come back next week for more Rebel Radio.